informal employment and informal economic activity exists and happens, and pretending that it doesn't or vilifying it doesn't help. So the first step is to think, how can we better support people who work in, you know, informally and in an informal sector?
Hello and welcome to the Prentice Foundation podcast, where we throw light on some of the African continent's biggest and most pressing issues and leverage best practice, not just on what to do, but how to do it. I'm your host, Marino Onwokolo, and it's a pleasure to share this moment with you. If you're new here, welcome. It's nice to have you here. If you're a regular, hey, how's it going? So this is the podcast where I share a lot of the super interesting conversations I have with really cool people. I'm a firm believer in sharing ideas that shape and challenge the world as we know it. My hope is that these conversations, where you get to be a fly on the wall, start further and deeper conversations wherever you are and lead to the exploring of actions and ideas that actually work and make a difference. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. Again, I'm Marie Noel and you're listening to the Prentice Foundation podcast. Today's podcast is in the Better Choices podcast series. Today, I'll be addressing the informal economy and informal employment in South Africa. As a way to introduce the chapter we would be discussing, I thought it brilliant, as with all my ideas, to read the executive summary to you. So here we go. Informality and the informal economy presents a conundrum to policymakers across the world. In developing countries, informal employment offers lower barriers to entry for unskilled workers, and the informal sector is more accessible to small enterprises. On the other hand, informal employment is precarious, low paid, and by definition lacks any support from the state. Is it possible to expand employment in the informal economy while at the same time protecting informal workers? In this paper, the authors offer an analysis of the limitations and opportunities of the informal economy in South Africa. It argues that South Africa's low levels of informal employment are products of its macroeconomic structure, particularly on the demand side of the economy, and are not caused by supply side constraints, as is often argued in the literature. The authors offer an explanation of why the informal economy is relatively small in South Africa and propose some policy options which could both expand informal participation and protect informal workers. Okay, so today I have the privilege of speaking with one of the authors of this chapter, David Francis. David Francis is the Deputy Director at the Southern Center for Inequality Studies and a PhD candidate in economics at Wits University. His research interests focus on labor market economics, the informal economy, and inequality. David was the researcher for the advisory panel on the minimum wage in South Africa. He has previously worked as a development consultant and a policy and budget analyst at South Africa's National Treasury, where he worked in health and social policy. He has an MA in Development Studies from the University of KwaZulu-Natal and a Bachelor of Social Sciences in Economics and History from the University of Cape Town. The second author of the chapter who will not be joining us today is Professor Imran Valodia. Professor Valodia is a professor of economics, the Pro Vice Chancellor for Climate, Sustainability and Inequality, and the director of the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at Wits as well. He led the initiative at Wits to establish the Southern Center for Inequality Studies, which is a multidisciplinary cross-country initiative to promote research and policy change to promote greater equality in the Global South. In August 2016, Professor Valodia was appointed by then Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to chair the advisory panel on the national minimum wage. This led to the introduction of a national minimum wage in South Africa. So super interesting people with lots of background and lots of practical experience and fieldwork in the space. So for today's episode, I will be speaking with David Francis, who is the first author that I introduced. He will be sharing with us some insights on the informal economy in South Africa and what those better choices recommendations are that he and Professor Valodia are making for South Africa in terms of addressing the informal economy and informal employment in South Africa. And on that note, let's get straight into the chat with David Francis. David, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Thanks to you, Marina.
I
Thanks
am
for having
very
me.
well. Awesome. I'm all the way on the other side at the moment, and weather feels like Johannesburg today, although it's probably at least 25 degrees, so it's still quite warm.
Where are you?
I'm in Accra,
Oh, wow.
Ghana.
Okay. Oh,
Yeah,
lovely.
yeah. Yeah, no. All right. So, David, to get us warmed up, I thought we could engage or play a very quick game. It's kind of like rapid fire. So I just ask you a few questions and you literally say the first thing that comes to mind, but obviously true, of course. Are you ready?
Sure.
Awesome. What was the first job on your resume?
Research assistant.
Ooh, where?
At the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban.
Oh, Durban. Okay, that's exciting. All right. How many languages do you speak?
One well and two badly.
Which ones do you speak badly?
IsiZulu and Afrikaans.
Ah, I see. Fair enough. All right. Do you have any hobbies or skills that people don't really know about you?
I'm a big runner. That's what I keeps me sane, and I do spend a lot of my spare time running around Johannesburg. So,
fair enough. That's a good one. What best describes your workday?
Chaotic at the moment, but I'm always optimistic that it's going to become more, more regularized. But it never is.
Oh, okay. That should make the next question slightly interesting. Are you a zero inbox person?
I am, which is partly why my day's cut, because I've probably spent too much time reading and responding to emails than I should.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. What would you say is one skill that you underestimated but has served you really well in your work?
Diplomacy, I think.
Ooh, tell me more. What does that mean?
Sure. I think that I've learned that working with people is not always just about finding the facts and then making a decision based on the facts, but that there's quite a lot more interpersonal things that go with those. And knowing exactly when to ask or tell people things or not is part of moving things forward in a collegial fashion.
No, definitely. I can see that. All right. And what was the last aha moment you had and what was it about?
Sure. That's a difficult question. I'm currently preparing a conference presentation and I suppose I had an aha moment about one of the kind of conclusions that I want to put forward for that. Not a very exciting aha moment, but that was the most recent one.
Oh, are you able to share that or is that until a conference happens?
So I'm doing research in a part of rural South Africa and haven't covered a whole lot of interesting things, but trying to find a kind of theoretical framework that makes some of those things make sense rather than just describing what's going on, trying to find a theoretical hook to place them in. So that was the aha moment.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, what comes to mind when you hear Africa in 2050? And that's the last question.
Sure. The most populous continent in the world, I think, by 2050. Rapidly urbanized. I think probably will be one of the more exciting places to be around the world.
Yeah.
There's lots of exciting things to come soon.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Thank you so much for indulging, David. That was really fun. Now on to the business of the day. So your chapter, right, the informal economy and informal employment in South Africa. Can you help us understand, what the sector looks like? Actually, maybe before that, it would be helpful to define these terms, in terms of how you use them in the chapter. I know this was co-authored with Imran as well.
Sure. I think that's a really good question. I'd say that there's maybe three terms that are important to understand. The first and the most broad is the informal economy. And I think that covers all informal work across the economy. So we often talk about the formal sector and the informal sector. So the informal sector is part of the informal economy. But also there's people who are employed informally in the formal sector. So if you have a job with a formal company, but you don't have a contract, or you're an outsourced worker in a precarious fashion, you could be informally employed, but in the formal sector. And so the informal economy covers that whole, the whole range of informality across what you think about as the economy. And then the next down is this distinction of the formal and the informal sector. So the formal sector, we think about registered businesses that are registered with whatever the, you know, business registration thing in their country is. They pay tax, they have a, they pay employment tax, they comply with all the regulations. And then you have maybe informal sector businesses, which are businesses that operate outside of that. They're not necessarily registered, or they don't pay tax, or they're just very small businesses that you know, don't meet the kind of regulatory requirements. And the third is this concept of informal employment, which, as I said, can happen anywhere, which is, that's about not where you work in the economy, but the nature of your employment relationship. So are you, do you have a contract, or are you employed, you know, with a verbal agreement? Is your employment formal or precarious? That's the distinction, I think, between whether you're working formally or informally in terms of employment. So I think those three are the kind of key definitions.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. So can you help us understand, sort of, if we're looking at, you know, a brief overview, if we're talking about the informal economy and formal employment in South Africa, what does that look like now, and why is that even important in discussions around these better choices that South Africa needs to make?
Well, I think maybe the first thing to make clear is that there's a sort of contradictory nature about informal employment. So informal employment, by definition, is, I suppose, worse than formal employment. We're talking about employment that's precarious, that's not backed by protection, legal protections. If you don't have a contract, you can't enforce your contractual, you know, employment agreements. You can't go to court to enforce that you get paid right or have the right amount of leave. So informal work is often very precarious and not the gold standard of what, you know, economists would think of as the ideal employment type. On the flip side, in most of the world, informal employment does offer low barriers to entry for people who, and it offers some way to make some sort of livelihood. And in fact, in the global south, the majority of employment is informal employment. So most people who work informally. So I think that's the kind of contradictory context. There's no clear answer. And a lot of the debate about informality is, how do you protect and formalize informal work to give informal workers the protection they need? One of the surprising things in South Africa, which is part of the Global South and is a developing country, is that actually our levels of informal employment and the size of our informal sector is much smaller than in our comparative countries. So I think informal employment is about 30%, 35% of all employment in South Africa. In India, for example, it's close to 90%. So there's a huge difference. And one of the kind of enduring conundrums in South Africa is, why is this the case? And particularly so in a country that has such high unemployment. You know, so India has very, very high levels of informal employment, but relatively low levels of unemployment. South Africa has the reverse. We have relatively low levels of informal employment, but really high, I mean, possibly up there with the world's worst levels of unemployment. So I think that's the kind of picture and questions that informed what we wrote about in the paper, particularly, how do you choose between two? What is the least bad choice? You know, faced with unemployment or precarious employment, you know, can you think about the benefits of either of those? And then if one is better, how can you make it even better? How can you protect workers? So we offer that up as a kind of conundrum in the South African context.
You know, that's very helpful. And can you speak a bit about, you know, I think in the chapter you talked that this, you know, this, the situation in South Africa in terms of the levels of, you know, informality, but also like an unemployment, is like a product of the macroeconomic structure. Can you provide a bit of insight as to why that is and why it also differs from a lot of the continent and other developing countries?
Sure. I mean, our argument in the chapter is speculative in some ways, but what we offer is that one of the reasons let me go back. I think people who study labor markets are very interested in workers themselves, and so a lot of the literature about the size of the informal sectors around the world looks at what are the characteristics of people who work in the informal sector. So it says, can we understand why the South African informal sector is small by looking at the type of people who work or don't work in it? And that's, there's a lot that's been written about that. We look at it from the other side and say, what can we say if we look at the structure of the South African economy about why that might lead to a relatively small informal sector and relatively low informal employment? And our argument is that because of South Africa's past, particularly the way industry developed under apartheid, you have a highly concentrated and really well-developed industrial core that can kind of service the economy. So, for example, wherever you go in South Africa, even to the furthest corners, you can find bread made by a company based in Johannesburg, freshly packed, or you can buy a can of Coca-Cola across the whole country. Whereas in other countries that maybe have a less developed industrial core, you would go into a rural area or an area far away from the city center, and someone would be baking bread that you would buy locally, or, you know. So there's this kind of asymmetry where you have this really well-developed distribution network from the industrial core that can provide goods to everyone in the country, but it doesn't offer the same levels of employment. You know, a local bakery, the kind of capital labor ratio is much, you're going to absorb much more people making bread than a big factory that then distributes bread across the whole country. So in some ways, the two are linked. The way that the economy distributes goods in a very efficient fashion also means that it doesn't offer the kind of levels of employment, formal or informal, that you find in other countries. So that broadly is our argument.
And I think part of, you know, the chapter, it was this idea of, you know, thinking about how could, you know, South Africa expand, you know, participation, informal participation, really, and protect informal workers. Can you speak on some of these, you know, recommendations or better choices that you think that need to be made?
Sure. I mean, I think just to go back to that caveat, we're not saying that we are aware that informal employment is not optimal in many ways. It's precarious. It's dangerous. It's low paid. It's very it has a kind of racial and gender inequality component. But again, within the context of high unemployment and the fact that there is informal employment, the recommendations are, how can we make that better? How can we allow people who work in the informal sector or are employed informally to have better working conditions, improve their pay? Even if we acknowledge that maybe ultimately it would be great if everyone was formally employed, that's the ultimate goal. So maybe just to be clear on that. And I mean, so we made four recommendations. The first is to think about local regulations, particularly city bylaws. So if you travel to downtown Johannesburg or downtown Pretoria, you will often see the police harassing people who are trading on the street, confiscating the goods, chasing these people away, because the city wants its sidewalks to be clean and free of traders. But actually, A, people are earning a livelihood, and B, providing a really good service. There's food and, you know, other things that you can buy on the streets, easily accessible and cheap. And so the first one is to think about, how can bylaws be redone or enforced in ways that don't penalize this already precarious work that goes on in cities. And Durban is actually one example. About, I suppose, 15 years ago, rethought some of its informal trading bylaws in certain areas of downtown and provided infrastructure and a kind of regulatory environment that allowed people to trade informally. And now there's some bustling parts of Durban where that happens and people can do it without harassment from law enforcement. And that's, you know, there's similar work that's happened in Ahmedabad in India and other places. So that was our first recommendation about ways that we could make informal employment better in cities. So the second is about that first point that I was saying, that are there ways that you can address the kind of concentration of industry and allow some windows for other people to trade? You know, so if you think that there's two or three bread producers that sell almost all the bread in the country, are there ways that you could reduce their dominance and allow openings for local bread production, or, you know, meat production, or the production of cold drinks, for example, some of which don't have very high barriers to entry, but in terms of what you need to do that to make bread, you don't need, you know, it's not an enormous investment, but even if you can get the tools together, you can't sell the bread because all the supermarkets have tied up bread supply agreements or whatever. So the second was to think about policies that improve market access for informal enterprises and allow people to trade. You know, another example is if you think about mechanics, that's an area that there's quite a lot of informal activity. But if you buy a car, if you get it serviced by your local mechanic and not by the dealership, you lose your warranty. And recently there's been some work by the Competition Commission that prohibits that and says, actually, you can service your car wherever you want. And those kind of regulatory changes allow small, both formal and informal mechanics to then be able to access a market of new cars to work on that is previously, previously unavailable. The third is the kind of thinking about the broader regulatory environment, the way our tax system is designed, for example. So VAT, you can only claim back VAT if you're a registered business, but you can claim back VAT on your inputs so that it reduces your overall cost of business. If you're an informal trader, you have to pay the final VAT cost. You can't claim back VAT on your inputs. You essentially are a VAT payer. And so thinking about ways that maybe informal companies could pay VAT. Whereas now, if you went and said you wanted to pay, you know, become a VAT vendor, you would have to register and formalize, and that's what you can't do, which is why you're an informal company in the first instance. So that would make it more competitive because it would lower the cost of doing business and lower the ultimate cost that informal companies could sell their goods at if they were able to claim back the VAT that they'd paid on their inputs. And then the last kind of ties to the first one about bylaws. The one is creating the regulatory environment. The other is, can you create the infrastructure that allows people to, and you see this happening more and more, cities sometimes building trading stands for informal traders so that people don't have to build their own stores or stands building concrete things, but you need to provide water and electricity. And how do you do all of those things? Cities are not very responsive. If you want to apply for a water account, you need a proof of residence, all those different things. Can there be ways that make this less onerous so that informal traders can get the assistance that they need to be able to function.
Okay. No, I think that's helpful. One question that just came to mind, David, and I was wondering if you have any thoughts, is do you know why a lot of this isn't being done? Is it because it's not deemed to be as important? Is it because it's too address a task? Or is it just because it's not even been talked about enough to warrant like further conversation, I guess, implementation around some of these ideas?
It's a good question, and I think it's probably a combination of all of those things. I mean, the one is that particularly in South Africa, and it goes back to these early policy debates in the early 2000s when people talked about two economies, the like backward informal economy, and I use the word backward in inverted commas, and that kind of forward cutting edge formal economy, and this belief that we must formalize everything quickly and we mustn't, the existence of the informal economy is in and of itself a problem and it must be fixed. And if that's if that's the starting premise, then you don't think about how you can invest and support that economy. You just think, how can you move people from informal to formal? And you see that, I think in the cities, people, why are you trading on the street? You must have a shop or whatever. And so there's not this thing of facilitating maybe a progress from the one to the other, or allowing the one to exist in its own right. The problem is, the informal economy is seen as a problem that needs to be solved. And one way to do that is just to chase it away. So I think there's a disarticulation between maybe, thinking about this and then how actually it's enforced at a city level. Are there conversations happening between economic planners who say we might need to support informal employment and, the police in a city who want to enforce their bylaws? So there needs to be conversations between the different levels of policy, I think. I think a related one is that it's, there's in South Africa, at least, there's no real organization of informal workers. This is starting to change around the world with unions for informal workers. But as a group, it's quite hard to organize and be recognized. And that means that having negotiating power to demand some of these changes is difficult. So, the city has a lot of power. A whole lot of separate informal traders don't have power to push back when the city starts to clear away or do these cleanup operations that the cities always talk about. Whereas I think more formal workers who are unionized or have other institutional power can come to the negotiating table and discuss. So I think there's this asymmetry between people who are working informally and regulators.
And you mentioned earlier about, you know, policies that improve market access. Can you provide either an example of where that's been done elsewhere or what some of these could look like? We can use any example that would be suitable.
Sure. So there was actually a nice example from South Africa, which was called the cooler condition. And essentially, so making soft drinks is something that doesn't have a huge barrier to entry. Separate from the brand. I mean, people do like to drink different brands of soft drink, but basically you need fizzy water, sugar, and some flavoring and some bottles. But no one wants to buy a warm cold drink. You don't want to drink a warm syrupy drink. So the key to being able to sell it is to get a cold one from the fridge. And the big suppliers of cold drinks in South Africa, they will supply fridges for their drinks to, you know, spaza shops or, you know, maybe informal shops or formal shops around the whole country. So you can always get a cold drink from these things. So the Competition Commission legislated that a certain share of, even if, you know, one company is supplying that fridge, a certain shelf or a certain percentage of that fridge had to be kept open for other cool drinks. So that if you had a local bottlery and you were making a cool drink or brewing kombucha or, you know, whatever it is, you would be able to sell that in that fridge and so that it could be cold. So that's, I think, an example of quite a small regulatory change that allows people to sell their cold cool drinks. So that those drinks are not on the shelf getting hot and dusty while the dominant player's drinks are in the cold fridge.
That's a really important one, and actually it sounds, I won't say it sounds trivial, it sounds small, but if you think about the impact of that, it's actually quite interesting. And I guess it would be interesting to see if other countries have done it as well. So I want it to be clear in terms of what you're saying, right? So you're not saying that, and these are sort of, I guess, reframing in my words, but you're not saying to dispossess or displace informal workers, because that often tends to be the popular approach in quite a number of countries. We've seen that in Nigeria and even here in Ghana. And nor are you saying, right, to allow the activities necessarily to go unchecked, but you're saying to find better ways to integrate them into strategies around growth and around development, whether that be in cities or broadly at the country level. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah. I think we're saying that the informal employment and informal economic activity exists and happens, and pretending that it doesn't or vilifying it doesn't help. So the first step is to think, how can we better support people who work in, you know, informally and in an informal sector, make their working conditions better, think about those power dynamics, think about market access. And that might be part of a broader process to move towards an economy where everyone is formally employed. But, you know, I think that even that is a difficult task. We're seeing, you know, informality is traditionally seen as a feature of the global south. So we think of the global north economies as almost entirely formally employed. But actually, we're seeing the reverse now with the rise of platform economy and gig work. Those kind of relationships which are proliferating in the global north are starting to look more and more like informal employment relationships. You know, these platforms talking about partners rather than employees. These are types of precaritization of work. And so I think we, in sort of a pragmatic way, we're saying informality is here to stay. And so how can we think about improving the conditions within it and, you know, making things better, even within something that is not maybe the optimal kind of employment relationship?
Awesome. The last question I have for you is, when conducting this research or putting together this chapter along with Imran Balodia, what was the most surprising and most interesting thing that you learned or came across?
Sure. I think that's an interesting question.
You didn't see that one coming, did you?
Yeah. I think part of it is this foundational thing of just how different South Africa looks from other countries that we're neighbors with or that we're seen as similar levels of economic development. I mean, you know, the South African research is often rightly criticized for South African exceptionalism. So we think South Africa is a totally different place from everywhere else. You know, in many ways, South Africa is more similar to, you know, other developing countries than we think. But in terms of these questions about informality, there are actually some really quite striking differences. And I think that's been the most surprising. And they're quite visibly evident when you drive from South Africa, for example, into Lesotho. At one of the border posts on the South African side is a shopping mall where, you know, there's a big car park, there's no informal trading, everyone is inside the mall. And as you cross the border, the entire street is lined with informal traders. You know, that's quite a stark, you know, kind of indicator of quite how different the two economies are. So I think that's been, as we've dug into the numbers and thought about these differences, seeing that South Africa is the exception in the developing world in terms of right. the way its informal economy is structured has been the most interesting thing.
No, definitely. David, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure doing this with you. Look forward to chatting some more over the course of time.
Great. Thanks, Mary Noelle. It's been really nice chatting.
That brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did putting it together. I love, love learning new things. Hey, if you enjoyed this chat, you definitely enjoy others that came before it. Check out previous episodes on whichever platform you're tuned into now, or visit our website, www.thebrentesfoundation.org, for other episodes. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if I could make one last ask of you, please do share this with others. Again, you're listening to Marie Noelle on the Brentes Foundation podcast, and it's been a pleasure sharing this time with you. Until next week, stay well.